Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rebel Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's the Tornado, Tony Senecal.
And tonight our show is going to have a special guest at around 8:30, Stephen Andrews. He's an investor in MMAXM. If you go to MMAXM.com, you can see what they're all about. Basically, it's a new marketplace for MMA fighters, managers, and promoters to network. They allow a promoter to post a fight, and that gets blasted out to all their fighters and managers via SMS text. The tools then let the parties negotiate the fight contract right from their mobile phones. And they've got 10 promotions on board, including XFC, Legacy FC, UWF, Invicta FC, and a database of over 145 fighters under the company banner there. And they hope to have 1,000 fighters and 50 promotions by the end of the year. And sounds like a pretty good business model. Maybe a future sponsor of ours would be nice. We'll see how it goes tonight. This guy is an investor in the company. Named Stephen Andrews. So we'll have to pick his brain about that effort and talk to him about that, of course. And not too much going on for MMA or boxing. I didn't watch any of either one except for the Ultimate Fighter after last week's show. I saw the Ultimate Fighter episode. There was some really good fights, really good fighters. Some awesome knockouts. This one kid just came out and threw this bomb of a right hand and knocked the guy out on the first punch. So that was interesting. And it was a twist this time because not only did they have to fight in the house this time and it was live, but also they only got 1 5-minute round because there are so many different guys. So they whittled it down to the final group of people to get into the house. Nobody really got badly injured or anything, so it's going to be a good season. It's got a lot of colorful characters there, a lot of tough kids, so looking forward to the season. It was kind of interesting to see the live dynamic with a lot of different announcers. John Anik is their new hire there. He usually does the MMA on ESPN show. And it's kind of weird because there's no audience. You know, there's a very small audience of private invitees. And there was a couple guests there from FX TV show. So, you know, it was kind of interesting that they were there and plug-in for the network. But they had basically Uriah Faber and John Anik and Dominic Cruz narrating the fights. And they were quick with the bleeps. They must have been on a time delay, so it wasn't quite live, because it sounds like they cut out a lot of swears. But it was a good episode, and obviously all pure fights. I think it was like 2 or 3 hours almost, at least 2 hours, maybe a little more. And then this week is going to be back at 10 o'clock, I think, this Friday, tomorrow. And it'll be, I think they'll pick the teams, and we'll see the rest of what's going on there, and then there'll be a fight at the end that will be live. So, that's that. Now, there's still a little buzz going on with this women's MMA fight, Ronda Rousey versus Miesha Tate. And a couple of things happened, maybe not as a result of that particular fight, but there's been a couple stories in the news about women's MMA because of what that fight really did to elevate it to a higher level. It was one of the first main events that the UFC has done under the Strikeforce banner. That's been a women's fight. And even though Dana White is kind of outspoken about women's MMA and has mentioned repeatedly that there's just not enough talent not enough women to make up divisions. His partner in crime there, Lorenzo Fertitta, is singing a different tune now. And he did a recent interview where he basically said, even though he does agree with Dana White on a lot of things, that he's more encouraged now that the women can make a go of it. And it sounds like, you know, he wants to invest more in putting women out there. So even though it was kind of a theory of mine that they would kill it off, they would kill women's MMA off and kill Strikeforce off eventually, it looks like maybe that's the saving grace of that whole company to get more women's MMA fights out of it. There's no mention, of course, yet of bringing it over to the UFC officially under their banner. But in Strikeforce, it's alive and well. But basically, Lorenzo said, you know, me and Dana, although we always go on a common front, we don't always agree on everything. The reality is, I'm a fan. I was captivated by the Ronda Rousey versus Miesha Tate fight, and I was blown away by their athleticism and the way they promoted the fight. The whole thing, to me, it was very entertaining. And he also says, Dana is right. Historically, there has been an issue with the depth of talent in the talent pool, but it seems to me like that is starting to change. And the one argument I make when we talk about it, and this might sound a little self-serving, but we've never been in the women's game, so we never had our matchmakers do this. Let Joe Silva and Sean Shelby develop a women's league. I guarantee you they can do it. They're that good. So, that's encouraging for the ladies. We also have another story that's related. There's a whole fight club, whole organization that's trying to beat them to the punch there with that idea of creating a whole women's league. And it's called Invicta, and that's actually one of the companies that's signed up with MMAXM. So we'll have to ask our guest tonight about that, if he knows anything about that. But Invicta Fighting Championships, they're going to create a whole women's promotion. And co-founder Shannon Knapp has been in some other big companies like the UFC. So she has a strong past as far as business development. But basically she knows that she's got her work cut out for her. But they're scheduling their first show for April 28th, and they have 12 fine fights lined up. The main event is Marlos Kunin, a former Strikeforce champion, versus Romy Ruysen. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but it's R-U-Y-S-S-E-N. And there's going to be some other veterans of Strikeforce and Bellator on that. And it's really been unprecedented. There's been a few promotions, Bodog, Smackgirl in Japan, and some company called Hook and Shoot that have done individual women's cards. But Shannon there has worked for the IFL, Strikeforce, and the UFC. So she definitely has some background to make it happen. And basically, the only difference so far between the female and male fights has been the money. You know, even though we always compare the money between boxing and MMA, there's really a different double standard there between men and women for fights, too. So this is actually going to be less expensive than having a whole, all men's league, because the women generally draw less and generate less income, so I think it'll work, but I'm surprised it's the first I'm hearing about it. And in other MMA news, sort of a funny story, Jose Canseco and Shaquille O'Neal are going at each other on Twitter, I guess, trying to arrange that MMA fight. And Shaquille O'Neal is obviously a big dude. He's mentioned before that he really likes MMA. The UFC has actually talked about putting him in an official position with the company since he retired from basketball with the Celtics. And he's always been a big UFC fan. They show him every now and then at the fights. But Jose Canseco, on the other hand, is a guy who's actually fought in MMA. I know he's had at least one fight against Hong Min, who he got his ass kicked against after he looked actually.
He also did a celebrity boxing match against a former NFL player, Rod Pickle. Yeah. Who played for the Eagles, played for, who did he play for first? I think he played for the Cardinals and the Eagles as like a running back, wide receiver, kick returner. And, but Vi was also a former amateur boxer. He actually still resides in Philadelphia, and he is a sports broadcaster on one of our three major, networks. And so they had this celebrity boxing match. I'm going back about maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And people were asking me, like, who's going to win? I said, Vi's going to kill him. Oh, why do you think that? Because Taker's, about 6 inches, 8 inches taller. He's probably, Taker will tell you, 260, which I'm not sure if that's how much he weighed. Vi was about 200. So, I'm like, Vi is going to kill him. Vi knows how to box, and Taker doesn't. He's a big, worried about, but that doesn't mean shit in boxing. And I said, Vi knows how to box. And it went about, 45 seconds. Vi knocked him out cold. Kicked the living shit out of him.
Funny. Well, apparently Jose is not making enough money selling his book and doing an autograph tour. So he's trying to get Shaquille O'Neal into a fight. And we'll see what happens. Actually, I was kind of surprised. Shaquille O'Neal is only about 40, and Canseco is 47, so that's quite the age difference. And I would already put Shaq as the favorite, just because he's much bigger. And he does have a little bit of a background in wrestling, and I remember reading somewhere, he had grown up wanting to do wrestling. So we'll see what happens here. I don't know if it's going to materialize, but it's definitely been in the news. It's been kicking around. And we know that past story that we've worked on about Jose's brother showing up for the fight instead of him, his twin brother, with celebrity boxing, kind of killed his chances of reappearing with that organization. So now he's going to look for somebody else to pick up his MMA fight. Let's see what happens. The other big UFC news this week, Rampage Jackson, we talked a little bit about this last week, has been talking smack, wanting to be released from his contract and just bitching in general about his treatment by the UFC. Basically, there's about three storylines here, because number one, we find out because he didn't make weight. He's injured, so that's the reason why he didn't make weight. But then the second storyline is, well, turns out he did testosterone replacement therapy. And obviously he didn't test positive or anything, because we haven't heard that part of the story. He basically was kind of pissed that, he went ahead and sucked it up and fought anyway for the UFC, and nobody made any bones about it or gave him any credit for sucking it up and doing that and fighting anyway, so as not to ruin the card. So the testosterone replacement therapy, it hasn't really made a lot of waves, but, he definitely participated in that before the fight and then didn't even win the fight because of whatever reason, his injury, or he just got outclassed. So he went out on a big tirade, started saying a lot of things on Twitter, went out on Inside MMA and gave an interview saying he wanted a release from the UFC. And basically said he didn't want to fight for the UFC anymore at all. But the key is, though the UFC said that they would release him, he still has one more fight left. So he's asked for a fight with Shogun, who beat him the first time. So we'll see what happens there. But I guess they've agreed to part ways with him. His last fight will be against Shogun Hua for no title or anything, just for Dragon Rank, winner of the rematch. His record was 32-10. Started off in Pride. And he last fought Rua in a Pride Grand Prix bout at middleweight, 205 pounds. And he says it's going to be his last fight in the UFC. He has talked about fighting in other promotions. And I don't know if he might do other movies or not, or if he's had offers, but there was a lot of smack talk back then when he did that movie because he made a lot and he thought that he should be paid more as a fighter because he took more risks, but he kind of was smoothed over and he shut up about it for a while. And now he's back on his soapbox talking smack, and he says, the UFC knew I was hurt. In almost every fight, I was hurt. But instead of saying thanks for not pulling out of the fight, they talk shit about a poor job I did. I never missed weight prior to the Bader fight, but when I do, nobody stopped for a second to ask if I was hurt. So I'm done with that. So that's it there. Some other news overseas in boxing. You might have heard of Frank Loney is a British boxing manager. And there's been an inquiry that he's involved in related to a boxer named Darren Sutherland, who was found, he hung himself at his apartment in southeast London on September 14th, 2009. And the guy was an Irish guy who's said to have been scared of his manager, was Frank Maloney, and worried that he would destroy his life if he quit boxing in his contract. And so there's basically what they call a coroner's inquest, and they don't really have any authority to bring charges or anything like that, but it's basically a huge scandal for this Frank Maloney, who's he factors in a lot of the fights over in the UK. In Europe, so it's a pretty big story over there, but I just thought it was very interesting because the promoter actually paid the rent on the apartment, so he had a key, and apparently there was a guy that was security for the promoter or bodyguard or whatever, sent him to the house to pick up some documents out of the house before the investigators could get a hold of them. And Maloney himself is the one who found Sutherland hanging in his apartment. So he actually had to go to the hospital right away with, you know, symptoms of shock, heart palpitations or whatever. But there was also, I think, like a $75,000 debt involved that the boxer owed the manager. And he's paying for his apartment. So what they did find, even after some of the documents were removed, was a to-do list, which mentioned paying back £75,000, not dollars, plus VAT, whatever that means. And another note written to Sutherland by his friend and advisor, Declan Brennan, saying, "Frank will destroy you in the media." That's Frank Maloney. But officers did not take another note, which the star's father, recovered days later, saying, "Frank will destroy you and your family and that he would hunt you down." The policeman said Mr. Maloney gave a statement on September 21st, 2009, in which it was not mentioned that he had returned to the apartment. And he spoke to him again on December 7th after he received a complaint from an Irish law firm when pictures of the Sutherland's home appeared in the country's News of the World. And another guy, a private investigator and physiologist Joe Dunbar, was questioned. But the Crown Prosecution Service said no crime had been committed. The death was ruled not suspicious, and there was no third-party involvement in causing his death, according to investigators. There's speculation that a threat to ruin someone could be a cause of death, potentially. So, the coroner said it may be an external pressure on someone why they might take their life, but it's not a cause. So, and it's kind of interesting, you know. We always hear about the promoters who, you know, take advantage of their fighters, but this sounds like this guy turned his fighter into a real indentured servant, and the guy didn't really want to continue fighting. He wanted to quit, and he knew that he couldn't because of this big debt hanging over his head to his promoter. So he just killed himself. Apparently there were some other pressures, some domestic issues and stuff, but that sounds like that plays a big factor in it. Anyway, did you get to watch any boxing yourself this week?
Absolutely. I don't know if you heard about the fight on Showtime this past weekend, but it was a classic. It was one that, if you find it on YouTube or find it on DVR or anywhere, I suggest you go watch it. And I mean, when I can go watch it, I mean, literally, right now. Stop it, Dylan. Stop listening to me. You go watch it. It was a rematch between Orlando Salido and Juan Manuel Lopez. And Salido, even going into the fight, really gained a lot of people's respect. He had gone to Puerto Rico last year and scored an upset, knocking out Lopez to win the featherweight title. So now Salido's a champion. They're going to have a rematch. Salido opted to once again go to Puerto Rico to defend the title, which, if the fight had gone two more rounds, may have been a horrible and very controversial decision. Going into the rematch, the fight once again in Puerto Rico, and Salido sort of opened the ball, started taking it to Lopez. Salido was winning the fight, he was taking it to Lopez, had him hurt a few times, and then I forget if it was maybe the fifth or sixth round, I'm not sure. Lopez did turn it around and knock Salido down, knock him down pretty hard, hurt him pretty good. Salido was able to continue fighting. Salido started to get tired around the 8th, 9th round, started when he was breathing hard. All of a sudden, going into the 10th round, he hit Lopez with a shot, so he hit him with two uppercuts. And then he hit him with a couple shots and put him down hard. Lopez got up, and, he staggered across the ring. The referee kept counting. I thought the referee was going to stop as soon as he stumbled like that. But the referee kept counting until he got to the 8th count. Lopez kept staggering, kept stumbling. The referee correctly stopped the fight. So they interview Salido. Obviously, he's very happy. You know, he said, hey, I'm a champion. I have no problem going to Puerto Rico to defend my title. So now they go to interview Lopez, who obviously is dejected. He lost. But he comes out and says that the fight was rigged. He's like, the referee was against me. He's got a gambling problem. That's why he stopped the fight. I was fine. And they even showed him the replay. Like, you're not fine. No, the referee, he's the son of the last referee that, refereed my fight, and he's got a gambling problem. I was winning the fight, I was dominating the fight, and they shouldn't have stopped it. First of all, no way was he winning the fight. No way was he dominating the fight. And if they did not stop the fight, he could have been seriously hurt.
The WBO has been so was so upset about his comment, they suspended him indefinitely. Now, the final controversy is they looked at the three official judges' scores, and one of them had it a draw, which was ridiculous. The other two had Lopez winning, which is absolutely disgusting. Thankfully, Salido was able to take it out of their hands and not, you know, not let a great fight be marred by a horrible decision. Also on the undercard, a very talented young player aligned for a fight with Salido, which should be an excellent fight. You know, kept his undefeated record intact with a stoppage of, you know, former Philip, former, former contender. I don't know if he was champion or not, Bernabe Concepcion. So, that was, you know, a good showing for Mikey Garcia and puts him in line for the fight with Salido.
Cool.
Also, you're going to get a kick out of this. I was on Saturday. I'll do this before we go on the interview. Saturday afternoon, you know, I was going to run out to go do a few errands, and I get a text message from a number that I did not recognize. And it said, hey, my son's playing on ESPN tonight. They wish you soon they have a chance to go to the March Madness tournament. And the only person I could think of that would have a son playing in college, potentially during the March Madness, was my old trainer, you know. So I texted back. I said, hey, I said, I'm sorry, I don't recognize your number. May I ask who this is? And he goes, hey, this is Kevin, your old trainer. So he called me up, and we talked about a half hour, you know, about the good old days. And, you know, his son, who I remember as a little kid, you know, is now a senior. His team actually just got eliminated. But he's a senior in college, and he's leading his team in scoring. And I said, I remember when I would fight coming out of the ring, and I remember the one time picking the kid up. He's like 6-7 years old. And so I remember we were just talking about, you know, some of the old days of us training together, and he told me what happened to my old sparring partner that passed away last month with a heart attack. But then we were talking about how stubborn I was. And the one fight we talked about was my fight with Brian Kerr out in Reno. The one where I was talking about, I got so pissed off at the fans, I tried to knock him out. And he goes, yeah, that was always you. You're probably the most hard-headed guy I ever worked with. He's like, you were so stubborn. And the one thing I said, yeah, so when I fought Brian Kerr, he had me so mad, and the fans had me so mad, I wanted to knock his head. Oh, no, I wanted to hit his head. I wanted to hit him so hard, I was going to send his head up to Mars. And the only reason I'm going to put the Mars was because I thought Saturn was too far to reach.
Well, you know, if you know, because it's really attached it.
Yeah, I know.
Ain't that the truth, you know?
Turned around backwards. Reattached it.
I was telling him about that. I was telling him, again, I was at the weigh-in for this fight, and I'm reading about this guy because I had something on the wall about him. And I'm like, something about overcoming medical issues, and very, you know, the fans are taken to him because of his overcoming hardships and this. And I'm like, what the fuck is all this shit about? And then I'm like, basically, I knew right then and there. Okay. Basically, you're telling me, box him. Get on my toes and just box him. You know, you just use speed. Well, I got so mad going into that fight, I just, you know, wanted to knock his head off. Like I said, they probably would end up putting his feet on his neck and his head on his ankle.
Yeah. Well, everybody didn't know the backstory. This kid was actually born with his feet on the wrong side of his body. So basically, he had to take his left foot off his right side of his foot, right leg, and switch him. So he had a little bit of a weakness boxing, and I would have never known about it going into the Nationals when I beat him to get the bronze medal. I would have never known about it, but he must have really pissed off his teammates because a couple of them came up to me and they're like, listen, this is the story. This kid sucks at moving side to side. To this day, I wish I would have asked him, you know, why do you hate this guy so much?
Yeah, because, you know, the only reason I could potentially think of, I mean, I talked to the guy, I talked to him, you know, at the show in Reno after we fought. I also talked to him at the Nationals that year, and then I talked to him again the following year. And he was a really nice guy. The only reason I can think of that, you know, his teammates had a lot against him was he was getting a lot of press coverage because of his, quote-unquote, overcoming hardships.
Yeah.
And maybe he was taking some of their thunder away. That's the only thing I can honestly think of. Because he seemed to be a nice guy. Now, the following year, and I was telling my trainer Kevin about this, we laughed again, following year he's going to fight Chuck Mastachi on the Nationals. And I got a hold of Chuck. I said, Chuck, you play this guy. I said, don't get close to him. I said, just dance. Dance and just rap. I said, you'll have him easy. I said, it was something I should have done, and I didn't. So Chuck shows up there. Basically, I don't think he probably landed a punch in three rounds. And, you know, Chuck wins the decision. And then I saw Kurt, like, the next night at the Nationals. I talked to him to hear, you know, all he wanted me to do was dance and run. He didn't want to fight me tough like you did. And I'm like, yeah. He didn't fight me tough like I did because I gave him a scouting report how to beat you.
I'd love to talk to those kids who told me about his issue again, find out what the heck they were so pissed about, but maybe he stole one of their girlfriends or something. Who knows? But anyway, we do have some fights coming up this week. Actually, there's a Bellator fight tomorrow night. Of course, there's another episode of The Ultimate Fighter as well. Bellator Fighting Championships 61. That's tomorrow at the River Dome at Horseshoe Casino and Hotel in Bossier City, Louisiana. So, look forward to that. The main event there is Brian Rogers versus Vitor Viana. Rogers is 8-3. Viana is 12-2. Also on that card, we got Vyacheslav Vasilevsky, 15-1, and Victor O'Donnell, 11-3. And Gilva Santana, 17-1, versus Bruno Santos, who is undefeated at 12-0. And the main event is actually Jose Falcon Saul. That is his. Gregor Norman Paris 10. Okay. We're going to try to hook up with Stephen Andrews in a minute here.
All right.
And let's see what else we got here. There's also a little bit of a story on Nick Diaz this week. He's contesting his positive test for marijuana after his last fight because there was a suspension involved, I think a fine as well. But technically, he's prescribed it because he has a California card for medical marijuana. And he didn't test positive for the actual substance. Apparently, he tested positive for the metabolites. So it wasn't like, you know, he smoked right before the fight to, you know, balance himself out or anything. I don't know. But basically, you know, he's trying to make the argument that, you know, this is prescription driven and it's a medical, what do they call it, a medical reason for bypassing the test or, you know, for whatever reason. But he's hired a lawyer and they're contesting it, and it looks like he might be successful, which would open up the doors for other medical marijuana users to fight in MMA and not have to worry about getting tested. I don't know. I mean, as far as an advantage, I don't think he would have an advantage if he smoked before a fight. Whether it's 2 seconds before a fight or 2 weeks, it just doesn't seem to me like something that would give you an advantage. Obviously, you know, you don't want a fighter to be doing any drugs for whatever reason, whether it's an advantage or, you know, it's just not good to be on drugs and be an athlete at all. So I don't know what's going to happen, but apparently the media has kind of embraced the idea that he's going to get away with it, and he's going to end up beating the suspension and fighting sooner than we think. And at the same time, you know, even though he lost his last fight, he's such a draw with the fans, and he's such a controversial figure that any card that the UFC puts him on is going to sell a lot of tickets and sell a lot of pay-per-views. So I'm sure they really don't want him to be suspended either. So there's probably going to be some back-channel work going on to make sure that his suspension either gets reduced or you know, something happens to where he can fight sooner than he's expected to. But we'll see. We're going to connect here to Stephen Andrews from MMAXM.com and see what he has to say about this little business matter.
Hello?
Hello, Stephen.
Yes.
Hey, this is Rebel Rousin Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
Good, thanks.
We're on the line with Tony the Tornado Pacquiao. He's our boxing guy.
Hey, Tony, how you doing?
How you doing?
All right, so, Stephen, you're giving a little bit of a breakdown of what MMAXM.com is all about. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you got involved personally and what you're doing for the company?
Sure. Involved in martial arts in 1998. I used to train with Guy Metzger at Lion's Den from 98 till 2004, and kind of became friends with people with fighting. And then recently I've been training at Austin MMA under Bruno Buffalo. So as I've been hanging out with the fighters and their managers and coaches and things, I keep hearing a lot of stories about how difficult it is to get right, and the whole process is so complicated in terms of getting the blood work done, the the promoter, and then all the communication that happens about being at this conference here, and the time you need to show up, and everything else. So my background is in software development, and thought it was about time that maybe MMA could catch up with other industries and become maybe more efficient as a marketplace. And so I got together with Wade Hample, who is a manager of US Insider, Charles Oliveira, also Tim Hag, DJ Lindemann, and Nathan Coy, and came up with the idea of creating a e-commerce system where promoters could post fights and managers and fighters could then respond to requests for fights and negotiate fees and everything else. So I know that, for example, Joe Silver, when he gets, you know, he needs last-minute replacements, he's just texting lots of different camps to say, have you got someone? But this way, what we're doing is putting it all on the web so there can be a kind of legal contract created with the promoter and the fighter. And basically, the promoter posts the site and texts all the fighters and their managers, and they respond and accept the check to propose the new travel costs or how much they're willing to fight for.
Cool. Now, we actually are kind of partners, not really for posting content. We used to post their content, but we're actually friends with a site called MMArecruiter.com. I don't know if you ever heard of that, but
yep.
That would be a good company for you guys to work with if you aren't already. But they do a lot of the same stuff, and we actually still get posts from fighters on the MMA Recruiter postings that we put on our blog back in like 2006 when that guy was first starting. And still to this day, you know, the article is like 2 or 3 years old, and I'm still getting comments on it from fighters who are looking for fights and looking to be picked up by a manager or something. You know, they're not always superstars or anything, but, you know, that's the kind of crowd I think would be interested in your opportunity. And,
absolutely.
That's definitely something that the community of MMA fighters and managers and promoters and all that would benefit from. But basically, what's your ultimate goal with this?
My goal is to get people in the fight and have a legal backdrop to that, where they've kind of contracted me legally through the system. So, you know, I've had a lot of friends go and fight in some local promotion, that they go there and they fight and they don't even get paid. I mean, I can't imagine training, going to camp, training, and then going to fight and then winning and not even getting paid. So we want to ensure that, you know, there is a legal, you know, way to get paid by having it done through the system. I also think there's potential for getting sponsorship for fighters through the system as well. I know how hard it is for fighters to get sponsorship. I mean, I've got guys that train with, they're in the MFC, they're in Legacy, they're in Strikeforce, and, you know, they might have banners with lots of logos on them, but they're getting like $100 here, $100 there. I mean, it's really awful. I mean, unless you're in the UFC, you get maybe 5 to 10 to 15 grand for your banners, depending on who you are. It's tough out there. So one of the things that we think would be possible is when we have a lot more traffic going through and fights being posted, we'll be able to see how many of these shows are on TV, for example, and may be able to go to corporate sponsors and say, instead of dealing with one manager or 13 different managers sponsoring, how about you come to us and we provide, we give you 13 fighters that are going to be on HDNet or whatever it is, and you can have your logo here, here, and here on the these fighters and kind of do both purchasing, as it were, for sponsorship. So that's another kind of idea that we've got going. And, I mean, we're early. This has only been out for like 3.5 weeks. But people have already got, there are only 149 fighters, but they're all kind of ex-UFC, Nova and Yao fighters from Brazil, and very high standards. So we've been able to get fights going through the system because some of the bigger regional promotions have started using it.
Now, for people who don't know anything about this, how do they get involved? Is there a fighter, promoter, manager, or whatever? How do they just go to the website and find out about it and sign up?
Yeah, we can go to MMAFM.com, and it's free, and you can sign up either as a promoter or as a manager or as a fighter. And, yeah, and it's very easy. If you're a professional, you can put your show host URL in it as your site record, and you can post, you know, videos, a bio, anything about yourself. And as soon as you get a promoter posted a site in your weight bracket, you will get a text on your phone saying there's this fight, for example, in Franklin, Missouri at 125 or 145 or 155. You want to get on the site.
And all the information is there as far as what the pay is going to be and all that stuff?
Yeah, what the promoters usually do is they fill out a form online which says, what's your budget? And do you have a travel budget? So they post it, and they usually do a range. It might be $1,000 to $5,000 for showing up based on experience. And then what you get to win, and then they write in, will they cover travel expenses, et cetera, et cetera. So.
Cool. And what do you like most about the sport in general, mixed martial arts?
Well, I think quite intellectual besides just going in there and battling out. I mean, you've got fighters with great game plans. Jackson's camp always has a pretty good game plan. So I find that really interesting. I love jiu-jitsu myself. So I think that's an amazing sport. Unfortunately, sometimes you can get too much of a game plan and then fight with Color Condit, where it kind of reminded me of Caleb Starnes running around the ring instead of engaging as much. But he won the fight. So, anyway.
And how did you first get interested in the sport?
I was working out in a gym where Guy Metzger had a gym inside a gym. And so every day I would go by and see all the highlight reels being played. And I got into karate, started off in karate back in the early 90s. And when I saw all that, I wanted to go in and check it out. So I started kickboxing with him back in 98. And loved it.
And as far as the growth of the sport, what do you think about how that's gone over the years since you first got involved in it? It first caught your eye. What do you think about the success and growth of the industry around it?
I think I really do. I mean, going out and getting it sanctioned everywhere where, a lot of put us down as men beating the crap out of each other, as opposed to being a legitimate sport with, high-level athletes that are training. And so I think they've done an amazing job at that, and it's just been building and building ever since. And, I'm from in the UK. I'm from England originally, but I've lived in America since 94. It's just getting so popular. Everyone's into it. Everyone's talking about it. And I think with the demise of boxing a little bit and the judging in boxing, sometimes that happens in MMA as well, but the judging in boxing can be very awful sometimes. I think people kind of like the raw deal of MMA and, so many finishes, et cetera, that it's just bit more exciting. I'm really excited about its growth.
So I take it that you're not going to expand to arranging fights for boxers. It's going to stay all
No, not anytime soon. That's not my interest. I heard you guys talking earlier about Frank Maloney. He used to be Lennox Lewis's manager. And he's a little guy. He's like 5'3", I think, and it's kind of interesting. I guess if money's involved, then you do that intimidation. That's interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of fading away as far as the cross training and promotion there of both sports. But I think a lot more guys used to cross it over from MMA to boxing back. Probably the best example would be Butterbean. He kept doing it year after year, ended up in the MMA primarily before he retired officially. But you hear about it that much these days. I don't know whether it's because it's not happening as much or it's just not that big a story. But guys used to cross over back and forth, and we used to talk about it before. We had a whole series of MMA versus boxing debate, about whether the sport of boxing is dying and. The big hot button issues. Yeah. we had discussions about the big hot button issues. Number one was usually the pay scale, trying to get the fighters in MMA more money. We started that back in 2006 and 2007, I think. And we're still talking about money in both sports. So sounds like what you're doing might help alleviate some of that. And, at least make it easier for some of these guys to make a living at it, who used to really struggle because there just wasn't enough money in it. But what is your perspective on that? I mean, do you see any major weaknesses in the sport, and how do you plan to use your business to fix those?
Right. I mean, the it's interesting you say that. And KJ Moons as well has been back and forth with boxing. And then you make a really interesting point about the money, because you remember Nick Diaz before he got his fight, where he was trying to, you know, get into the UFC and fight Georges St-Pierre. He was Peter Gracie was saying, oh yeah, we're going to do boxing because there's more money in it. So he's kind of using it as leverage. But I think what we're trying to do is the fighters out there who want to get into fights, it takes a lot of effort sometimes to get into fights, get in terms of promoters and everything else. And we're just trying to make everything more transparent so that people can actually know about the fights that are happening and actually on their phone negotiate with that and get themselves into a fight. So we want to expand this. We've got, I'd say, nearly all pro fighters up there right now, but we'd like to increase this and to, you know, get more amateurs up there as well. Although it's harder to verify their records, but get more amateurs up there and just get them fighting. But, you know, I think it takes a certain person who wants to go and fight, and you know, they get like paid $500 or $1,000, and the money definitely isn't there. But as we see the rise, hopefully there'll be bigger and bigger payouts.
Yeah, it used to be, you know, some of these smaller organizations. Return is one of the worst cases of that because it killed them. But, you know, the UFC is even taking a lot of heat. There's a big story on ESPN about other fighters. And they'll turn around and say, well, you know, just the opportunity to fight in the UFC gives you so much power for negotiating with sponsors and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. But even the guys that leave the UFC, just having that ex-UFC label helps them out a lot, I think. So there is a point to that. But at the same time, some of their lower-tier fighters on the preliminaries or even some of the lower on the totem pole fights that are actually on pay-per-view seem to be getting the short end of the stick a lot, you know, and we don't see the fight bonuses that they get sometimes, but to consistently train and you know, do all the press conferences and appearances and all that, and then you end up with a paycheck of like $3,000 for a 15-minute fight, and, you know, you get injured at the same time. I mean, at least they have health insurance for that, but it's just, it seems like a raw deal. They should be making at least, you know, $5,000-$10,000 a fight. And there's a lot of people making around that $3,000 mark.
Yep.
For the biggest promotion in the world, you know, and they've got money hands over fist, and they get a whole government invested in them, in Abu Dhabi there. So it just blows my mind sometimes that they can get away with that. But I think it'll change over time.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been privy to a few insights into what some of the UFC fighters are getting for sponsorships. And I know one in particular who was just about on the main card and sometimes on the undercard was able to pull in $10,000 to $16,000 per fight in sponsorship. So that's pretty good. He's got a great manager. And I think once you've been in the UFC, sometimes you can, you know, pull maybe even more in regional events. I think a lot of the regional promoters are also, you know, they're really interested in how many tickets you can sell. And I think one thing that we've talked about on our system is, can you track that in any way, you know, and so promoters can actually see how many tickets you're selling. A good example is Tim Hag. He was in the UFC. He fought Todd Duffy and had a few fights in there and then was released. But he's such a big pull in Canada. He can sell so many tickets. He's getting much more money fighting on that circuit than he was in the UFC. So,
Yeah, that's very important. We actually had an interview with a guy named Rayco Saunders, who was a boxer. And this was back in 2006 when I first started. And he had mentioned how he was his own manager for a while. And he
actually have to go around town doing everything, you know, basically selling tickets by himself. And one time it actually affected his fight performance because he was in the car the whole week driving all around town. So his right foot from hitting the brake and the gas pedal was injured, sort of. Well, it wasn't really injured, but it was hurt. So, you know, he couldn't move as well. And I forget whether he lost the fight or not, but it's kind of one of those things that, you know, if you don't have a nice promotional and management crew, you really do have to sell yourself in a lot of ways, and you have to work at it. So you really build your own destiny in that respect.
Absolutely. It's kind of interesting because, you know, Dana White has been throwing out, you know, you don't need a manager and all that sort of stuff. And then you've got the American Top Team who offer to manage their team members for like 5% cut. And, you know, they said to Shogun Rua, there was an article on him as well, that he was firing his manager and all these people firing their coaches and things like that. But, you know, I can't see how, if you're a fighter at that level, you know, if you're managing yourself and trying to get sponsorship the week before the fight and, you know, having to deal with all that stuff, I mean, when you get to that level, I just think that you really need a manager to make your life easy so you can concentrate on just fighting.
Right. So basically, you know, somebody goes on the website and, you know, if they're a fighter, they make out their whole profile. It's like a resume, and then they just kind of wait by the phone. Is that how it works?
Yeah, basically, it's kind of a chicken and egg scenario. We need fighters and we need promoters. We've signed up about 10 promoters, including Fight Time Promotions out of Florida, Donofrio MMA. I think Donofrio is out of Florida. Midwest Ultimate Cage Fight, Legacy Fighting Championship, XFC, Pure MMA, G1 Fight, from Victor, the female, the women's MMA. Yeah. And Fight to Win, Ultimate Warrior, Cage Sport, and CFA. So we're signing them up all the time. And basically, yeah, you follow the link to sign up as a fighter or as a manager post. And as soon as these fights are posted, you get notified. So,
you're invested in it. Who else is involved that you know of that is working to get, you know, set this up and keep it going? And what's the plan in the immediate future to keep building it?
Well, we have Wade Hample, who's Charles Oliveira's manager. He's also manager of Nathan Corey, J.J. Lindgren. He's an investor in this. We have a Brazilian called Rico Castro, who's an amazing jiu-jitsu and judo practitioner from Nova now. He's an investor in this, and he brings a lot of the Brazilian contingent that I've signed up on here. And then we have also on the software side an investor who's doing a lot of the software development. He's an amazing software developer who's worked for the Federal Reserve Bank and Treasury System and all sorts of amazing projects that we've done there. So we have those guys. And what I would like to see is maybe actually going into partnership with one of these regional promotions like Legacy, where they can actually help build out the system a lot more. I mean, we envision once you go up there as a promoter that you use this whole system to manage your fight card. So communicating with all the fighters and managers, telling them when the press conference is, like just writing one email and automatically texting to everyone who's on the card to their phone, actually having people upload the blood work and their licenses into the system so it can be seen by the promoter online. Whereas, you know, now it's kind of like scanning and emailing or FedExing, and, you know, there's a lot of paperwork that goes into that. It takes time and effort and everything else, and it's taking. The promoters could have one place to manage the whole fight card. That would be the dream. So we're starting to talk to these promotions about whether they come on and become a part owner and build the system out. But we're also looking at making some of this confidential so that promoters can go and actually pick a fighter they would like on their card, and instead of just posting it publicly, they can go out and automatically be in contact with the manager or the fighter if they would be on the fight card. Talk to Sam Kaplan from Bellator, and he was like, the system looks awesome, but I need complete confidentiality. So that's one of the ways we're looking at increasing the functionality to maybe just like Bellator could use it.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. So it's kind of like a networking system more than anything, it sounds like, just to keep everybody connected to each other. You know, that niche, it's always growing and expanding, so.
Yeah, and maybe.
The tough part is just organizing it.
Right, and maybe more than just being a networking place, it's not really a blog tool, but a fully functioning e-commerce system behind it. So we can see in future if the promoters want, you know, are putting money in escrow, so maybe they put half of it down in escrow, then the fighters make sure they get paid through the system, kind of like a PayPal as well. So, you know, there's all that functionality, and then it's got the whole legal contract, which is kind of generated by posting the fight and accepting it as well. So I'd say it's a little bit more robust than just that, but that's essentially what
so
it
does
is.
Does your site actually formulate the contract, or is that at all through the promoter?
Well, when the promoter signs up, there's this four-page, I'm not sure they're reading one, but there's this four-page agreement they're signing, saying that, you know, these fights are creating a legal document, you know, for a commitment to fight. So, as opposed to just calling someone and saying,
if the promoter puts the money down and then doesn't pay, then they have a legal document they can turn to, the fighter at least, and say, hey, you know, you sign this, right? Is that how it works?
Absolutely. Yes, that's how it works.
Well, it sounds awesome. And is there any real success stories that you can give us as far as examples go, how the system has worked for some of the people involved so far?
Yeah, just last week we had 355 pounders based at Ultimate Warrior Fighting. They've got three shows in a kind of a tournament format, and they posted just the other day, and they had, you know, multiple managers bidding on it, and they placed three fights through the system. So that was one. We got another one through Ultimate Cage Fight as well. And you mentioned earlier the Victor promotion. We spoke to her the other day. She's just signed up within the last 8-9 days. But we've got maybe 15 female fighters up there, and we would love to get more, because she can just come here and very easily get to as many, you know, fighters. It's over a huge amount of time just by posting fights on here. If we could get a little bit more volume for her, and she was very interested and excited about the system.
Yeah, actually, I was reading an article about Invicta earlier and their plans to do an entire women's promotion aspect where they just do women's cards. So I would think that your organization would be a really useful tool for them, seeing as the women's fighters are a little bit more fragmented, and they're not, the ranks are not as you know, full as the male counterparts. Sure that will change too because of some of the success that we've seen, especially the last Strikeforce card there. Women have always kind of gotten the short end of the stick, and the UFC guys have kind of badmouthed them for a little while. Now they're starting to turn around. I doubt we'll ever see them anytime soon anyway in the UFC, but it sounds like they're not going to kill the division in Strikeforce. But this Invicta, I think it's the first one I've ever heard of that's going to do all female fights on the card, so...
Mm-hmm.
I would think you guys would be really key in setting that up for them and making that happen and getting the fighters connected.
Absolutely. So it's a real opportunity to kind of build a niche with them while growing the rest of the system. So definitely we see that as an opportunity. And I know she's trying to get all the different weight classes, much lower weight classes, officially recognized as well, with their, you know, athletic commissions and stuff and that's got they're working on right now for that. But I don't mind women's MMA at all. I think it's pretty exciting. And watching Ronda Rousey, my God, she's incredible.
She was not going to let go of that armbar.
Even though it's like hanging by a sinew. Yeah, she was still ripping it.
I was surprised it took that long for Tate to tap on that. It's just like brutal. I've seen a lot of MMA fights, male and female. I've never seen an armbar that bad. And I've seen other submissions that broke guys' arm, but nothing like that. That was just tremendous. And she doesn't even have that much MMA experience. You know, she's like 6-0 now, I think. So it just goes to show you the potential that she could bring. She's definitely already being called the new face of women's MMA, taking over Gina Carano's spot there. So it's definitely one of those things that has a lot of potential. And one of the things that we've actually done at Fight News Unlimited is try to generate more of a spotlight for some of the female fighters. And we've done a lot of radio shows with female fighters, boxing and MMA. Did actually a ton of written interviews with boxers and female MMA fighters when we first started out. So it's something that we always try to, you know, fit in wherever we can and give them a spotlight. And one of the main reasons is because when I was in high school, there was a young girl who came out for the wrestling team, and she was the only one who ever made it onto the team. She was the first one to ever wrestle in a match as a woman in Massachusetts against a guy. And then she went on to wrestle for Harvard as the first woman to wrestle for Harvard. So, you know, she always impressed me just with her resolve and guts to stick it out. And I still keep in touch with her today. And, you know, it's amazing to see that it's taken this long for women to really blend more into wrestling. And now you actually see women in the state and national tournaments at the high school level. So she was one of the original pioneers of that, and something that I've always respected, that a woman could come into a man's sport and succeed and, you know, do whatever it takes and deal with the backlash and everything, and the people saying, oh, you know, women should be prettying themselves up. They shouldn't be fighting. And it's kind of funny because I mentioned the boxing versus MMA debate, and we had Ken Shamrock on with somebody. I forget who else was on the line. Oh, it was Iceman John Scully, who's a boxing trainer. And they got into the worst argument right at the end of the call about women fighting, you know. And if they were in the same room, I think they would have fist fought.
What was Ken's position?
Ken's position was any woman can do what any man can do. I think he has daughters, so he has a lot of women fighters under his Lion's Den gym there, so he has a different perspective. But being a boxing guy where women's boxing never really caught on, like it maybe had one moment of fame when Christy Martin was involved and they had the first HBO bout with women. I think that was at its peak in the 90s, but Iceman John Scully, I mean, he doesn't train any women fighters. He's his most famous guy right now, I think, is Chad Dawson. So, you know, he was adamant, you know, females shouldn't be fighting. You know, I don't want to see a female get in there and bash her face in or come out looking like crap. You know, guys like to see women pretty. So, I mean, he made that point, and then Shamrock was just like, you got to be kidding me. You know, any female should not be prevented from going in there and, you know, going all out and fighting to the best of her ability. And I actually remember having to yell out, break it up, break it up.
Well, I remember we had a Lion's Den. We had a lady called Kathy Brothers who was, I believe, training for the Olympic wrestling team. And so that was probably back in 98, 99 time frame. So, and Ken used to come into Guy's gym all the time and do training. And she was amazing. I saw her fight once on a local card with Guy's MMA. I think also now a lot more women are doing jiu-jitsu. And I got one lady I train with. She's a black belt. And once you get tapped consistently by someone who's like 40 pounds lighter than you, like, you learn to respect them a lot.
Yeah. Oh, I saw that Cyborg Santos there. She fought a guy who was an MMA reporter, and she had the huge gloves on, you know, like the giant sized, almost inflatable gloves. And he had, you know, full headgear on and everything like that, and she still kicked his ass. All over the mat in the gym, and they taped it and everything. It's pretty funny. But they're just as tough as some of the guys out there. Some of them even tougher.
I mean, for Misha Tate not to tap, I mean, she had such a strong will. She wasn't going to tap. And when the first arm bar went in, I mean, you could hear everyone groan when they were looking at the arm, kind of that it was dislocated at that point, and she still got up and carried on for a couple of minutes, and it's like, oh my God.
One thing I noticed, you know, being in Massachusetts when some of the female fighters made it onto the MMA cards there, before they were actually officially regulated, before the UFC came to town and all that, but I used to go to some of the shows, and I would always notice whenever there was two females in the cage, they seemed like they were had a little extra, you know, because not only were they fighting to win and for their own individual success, but it seemed like they were fighting for all of womankind. Like, they wanted to represent women in general, and so they knew they had to kind of put a little extra out there. So it seemed to me like every woman's fight on a male card would steal the show, because there was just that extra motivation involved.
Absolutely.
As far as the sport in general, what do you think about the future of the sport? And, you know, what do you think are going to be some of the major developments we're going to see in the next few years in MMA?
Good question. Well, I think it's going to be more global. I mean, UFC is obviously expanding into England, Brazil, and everywhere else. And I think it's becoming more of a national sport. For example, in Brazil, I think they had 20 million people watching the last Jose Aldo fight when it was down in Rio. So I think it's going to be much more global and might even become the Olympic sport. I know jiu-jitsu is for the next Olympics, but that would be interesting to see. I just don't know where it's going to go with the money. UFC is just such an 800-pound gorilla. I don't know how all these other promotions can get as much money in to pay the fighters more. But, that's something I don't know where it's going to go. It'd be interesting to see.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting when Donald Trump got involved in Affliction. And he actually had a conference call that I was involved in. I got to ask the last question out of him. And the question I asked was, you know, what do you see the future of Affliction? You know, how do you think it's going to develop, and what do you plan to bring to the table? And he gave an answer like, you know, I really don't know. It's a wait-and-see kind of thing. And maybe you'll tell me, he says, in a year or two, how good we've done. And in a year or two, they were collapsed.
Yeah.
So it didn't work out for him, and that probably turned away a lot of investors who were, you know, looking at his example and saying, geez, you know, if you're going to compete with the UFC, you're just not going to make it.
No.
I think some other guys have to step out of the shadows and start putting some money down, and we'll see what happens. But one of the best developments as far as that goes was when Bellator got bought out by what's the company, Viacom. So now they're under a major corporation banner. And it kind of made the UFC guys say, well, you know, you're trying to say we're a monopoly. Well, look at these guys. You know, they're owned by their own TV networks. So it was kind of a, kind of funny to see them pointing the finger at someone else for monopoly issues. But
That is interesting.
Yeah, it's something that I haven't heard any major changes as a result of them buying out Bellator, but if they wanted to, they could really revolutionize the sport by just throwing a couple $100 million at it and really building it. I think we're going to see a real surge in popularity for Bellator when they move to Spike next year.
Yes.
But I mean, it just shows you how brutal the business can be with some of the things that Spike and the UFC are fighting about now, because the Spike has the full rights to all the content that they have until the end of the year to air it, even though they didn't do their deal with the UFC to extend their contract. They still have the rights to air it, so they've been taking every chance they can get to counter-program the UFC when they have live events on other channels. And the UFC used to do that to Strikeforce, so it's kind of funny to hear them complain about it.
My concern about that whole deal would be if you get like two or three major promotions, if Spike on, you know, do throw a load of money at Bellator and it gets really popular, and they're all doing the same weight classes, then I think the fans might lose out, because kind of like with Fedor, you know, he never fought Randy Couture right at the beginning when Randy Couture left the UFC for a time, and you won't get to see the fights that you really want to see, you know? And that would be sad for the fans not to, you know, have that. So I hope I can foresee that happening, but I hope it doesn't.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, too, because I remember that, and that's one of those stories that I followed a lot. And I actually met Randy out in Vegas. I interviewed his son, too. And I always wanted to see that fight. And my perspective on the Fedor issue was it didn't matter what the guy wanted, you know, whether he wanted to co-promote or whatever, or the Russian people that were running his camp were crazy as far as their demands. The UFC should have just gave it to him when he first asked for it, made the deal, and then exposed Fedor, because I don't think Fedor was ever as good as people said he was. Maybe back in his early days when he was just mowing people down, but when it came time for him to talk about going over to the UFC, he had fought really a series of bumps, one after another. And then when he finally made it to Strikeforce, we find out he's exposed, and he had difficulty in every single fight in Strikeforce until he finally gets submitted there. So it just kind of made me think, geez, you know, they really dropped the ball, because there wouldn't have been anybody out there saying, you know, how great Fedor is if they'd signed him immediately and then put him up against their best guys and he got beat. So I think Randy definitely would have beat him, but I always thought that that would be Randy's last fight and they would make it happen because, you know, his retirement was so close after them making the deal for Strikeforce, but they had that small window and it never happened.
Yeah, that was sad, because, you know, back then, maybe 3 or 4 years before, he was still, you know, a bit closer to his prime. That would have been really interesting to see. Unfortunately, you know, by the time he was done to Strikeforce, he's at the end of his career, and he never got to see them at the peak, so.
I remember shortly before they started talking about bringing him to the UFC, he fought in Bodog, and he fought Matt Lindland. And there was a controversy because I guess he was holding the ropes and keeping himself up from the takedowns Lindland was trying to go for. And then he ended up winning the fight by knockout. So, and Lindland was always one of those journeyman type of guys. He had his moments, but at that point in his career, he was kind of just an opponent. So to have him end up in that much trouble against a guy like that, and everybody's saying he's the best thing since sliced bread, at that point was when I started thinking, wait a second, the guy may not be as good as people think he is. He actually lost that fight if he played by the rules.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because of course Fedor, he fought Hongman Choi, who you mentioned earlier was fighting Jose Canseco.
Yeah.
You know, you put Fedor and Hong Man Choi and Jose Canseco in the same kind of bracket by them fighting each other, that kind of makes a mockery of the whole thing.
But he's still going. I give him credit for that. He hasn't given up. As much as he's had a reality check in the last few months, he's still going. But anyway, is there anybody else you wanted to give a shout-out to or any final thoughts you wanted to put out there before we call it a night here?
Well, just thank you very much for having me on, and shout out to all the guys at Octagon MMA. I've got a great fight team and a great coach in Jake Salad, who was voted Texas's best MMA coach this year. So big shout out to those guys. If you have an iPhone and you want to learn some jiu-jitsu, I have another company that produces the whole series of training videos on your iPhone. It's called MMA Applications, and you've got about 9 different apps that go through Fight, Kill, Guard, MMA, and we've got 4-time world champion Bruno Bacchus doing the one-on side control, and we've got some great coaches doing jiu-jitsu and also kickboxing. So, if you're interested, you can go and type in MMA applications on the iPhone App Store.
Cool. I watch a lot of MMA myself. I haven't ever tried to actually do it yet, but I have been in a couple scuffles where it's come in handy. You know, just not anything serious where it's, you know, a real fight, but, you know, people getting drunk and trying to wrestle and put them in a rear naked choke, and that stops that.
Yeah.
But it's kind of surprising, you know, it just it grows on you the more you watch it, because I never would have even thought of doing some of those moves until I, you know, see it time and time again, and it just comes out as instinct.
Absolutely. When I first started jiu-jitsu, I've done kickboxing, watched Joshua train and submission wrestling at Ryan's time. But the first day of jiu-jitsu, you know, someone was in side control and I was putting one foot on the other knee so they couldn't get into the mount just because I'd seen it, you know, so much and didn't know what I was doing at all. But kind of you get the idea of something. So it's really interesting when you get put in that situation after watching it. And, you know, some of the guys in the UFC, you know, they could do a lot more by learning more jiu-jitsu, that's for sure. So when you start to learn it, it's very interesting watching what they're doing and start shouting at the screen, there's an arm open, take that arm bar, you know, all that stuff. So I love it.
Yeah, actually, it was kind of one of those things we've been talking about for at least a year now, from what I've noticed watching the sport. It's become way more of a striker's game. And, you know, I think there's a lot of factors. Number one, you know, you got the fight of the night bonus. A lot of people are fighting for that, especially in the UFC. You know, I don't know, other promotions must give bonuses for wins, of course, bottom line. But, you know, it's just the fans. They probably are better off than they were at the beginning of the sport, where they used to boo every time it went to the ground. But they love seeing the striking. You know, they cheer for it. They come to the fights to see it out of certain guys who always stand and bang. And it's just more exciting. It helps the fighter get recognized and, you know, go viral with their fight videos. So I think it's just kind of naturally adapted towards a striker's game. And some fighters are good at it, and other fighters are hopeless. You know, so they try to use their other strengths, and wrestling plays a huge part. Jiu-jitsu, like you said, plays a huge part with the submissions. But it seems the biggest weakness for most fighters is boxing, and I think that's why you see some of the top-tier guys like GSP and Rampage Jackson actually just started not too long ago, started working with an official boxing coach, and he's actually talked about moving over to boxing. But I just find a lot of these guys just aren't good with their hands. You know, they could kick another guy's legs all day long, but they just can't throw a punch.
Right. And I luckily enough, when the UFC, I think the UFC 103 came to Dallas, Junior DeSantos was fighting Mirko Krokop then, and got to go hang out with him and Minotaro Nogueira and his junior de Santos, his boxing coach, and one of my partners in MMAXM, the Brazilian guy who's a black belt in judo and jiu-jitsu, was training with de Santos. And got to see that from about 1 foot away. And, you know, he was such an amazing striker. He's got incredible takedown defense. That he's able to win it on his striking, because, you know, he might be a different belt now, but he was only, but it's still a pretty good belt. He was a purple belt in jiu-jitsu then. And, you know, he's UFC heavyweight champion right now, and I think 90% of that is his striking and takedown defense. I mean, he hardly ever uses it. He's got it, a little bit of it, or quite a bit of it, but he doesn't ever use it in his fights. And like you say, people want to see them bang and, you know, knock people out, and it gets exciting. So he's got incredible hands.
Yeah, and a couple other guys I was going to mention earlier. I mentioned already Rampage, but he actually talked about going over to boxing, too, for the money. There was another guy, too, heavyweight, Alistair Overeem. Was talking about going into boxing before he ended up signing with the UFC. So it's one of those things that people are now talking about going over for just the money more than anything. MMA still has a bright future. I just think a lot more companies like yours are going to have to help build it and create the roadmap for better paydays, better networking, better contract situations. And I think it's great what you guys are doing. I definitely will keep track of you. We'll put together a nice written piece based on this interview here. And if there's ever any updates or anything that you want to send us, you got my email now, and we'll definitely keep in touch.
Okay, thank you so much for having me on. I really enjoyed it.
You're welcome. It's been fun, and I definitely will stop by the site and check it out, and keep a lookout for your future endeavors there.
Thanks. Everybody check out MMAXM.com.
All right. Thanks a lot, and keep emailing me. Keep me in the loop.
All right.
Thanks a lot. So there you have it. That's Stephen Andrews of MMAXM.com. He also emailed me from an address for a website, boldventures.com. So he also mentioned his other application company. I'm sure most of his stuff must be listed under that .com, boldventures.com. So check that out. And what do we have for boxing coming up this weekend?
But the Garden, Madison Square Garden.
What is it?
Yeah, the Garden. World middleweight title fight. Sergio Martinez defending his title against Matt Macklin. So obviously on St. Patrick's Day, Macklin, the Irishman, is going to, you know, try to get the luck of the Irish.
Oh, yeah.
And,
St.
Martinez was a
playmate. Yeah.
So that'll be actually a pretty rocking good time. Mac was a tough fighter. I remember I actually saw him live when he was like only like two or three fights into his career down in Philadelphia. Tough guy. You know, obviously Martinez is going to be the favorite. You know, he's an elite fighter. You know, one of the boxing's elite right now. But it should be tough. And, you know, anytime you get somebody that's got a lot of emotion on their side, I mean, they're always capable of, you know, pulling off the upset. I mean, I'm not going to say he's going to have, like, the emotion on the side like Buster Douglas did with his mother dying before he fought Mike Tyson. But, you know, being the fact that it is St. Patrick's Day and, you know, with everybody wearing all the green, and I mean, it could, you know, lead them on to great things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it should be a good fight.
from what it sounds like. Let's just check the schedule here on Box Rec, see what else we got coming up.
I also did get the other day that Tamer and Hank Lundy wants to be on our show again.
Oh, really? Doesn't he have a big coming up, too?
Yeah, so coming up, I think it's the 30th on ESPN. Again, it's a guy by the name of Danny Williams, and he's done a lot of show back and forth.
Right, yeah. Yeah, he's good with that ESPN. Gets a lot of those gigs.
Yeah. And also, I also have another big-time verbal commitment.
Yeah?
I was talking to a gentleman by the name of Kevin Burwell, who will be on our show.
Nice.
You know who he is?
Is it... your buddy there, Larry Holmes?
No. Kevin Burwell.
Kevin who?
Burwell.
Burwell. I don't think I've ever heard of him, unfortunately.
Yes. Who is the person responsible for training me?
Oh, all right. That should be fun.
From Philadelphia, yeah. I was talking to him the other day when I got a text message. I told him, I said, John, you got to get on the show or something.
Well, we have an opening right now for 9:15 next week, so I'll just go ahead and let you arrange one or two, or either one of those two possibilities, if you could.
I'll call Hank tonight, so I'd like to get Hank in the week before his party.
Yeah, that would be nice.
So, all right, I'll work with you to get off.
And the Christy Martin and Mia St. John fight isn't happening until June. So whenever I hear back from them, if they want to do, we can rearrange it. So they won't be expecting to do it next week, I don't think. But I'll email those guys and say the next opening is the 29th because the 22nd is full. I like having guests anyway. Because it doesn't give me a chance to fuck up. And sit there with dead air, you know? Oh, what do I talk about?
We'll talk about anything, too.
Right.
I was told by one coworker the other day, I said, the one thing I like about doing the show is because we are so unstructured. Yeah, sometimes, you know, we'll hit some dead air or we'll hit, you know, we don't have a lot to talk about. But I said, the thing I like about it is I get the freedom to just pretty much discuss what I want to talk about. If I want to talk about basketball, I'm out of value right now, and you're not going to have any shit on.
Yeah, every now and then you get your weekly rant in.
I get my weekly rant, and I rip on people that I don't like, and I'll talk about work, how much I hate it, and God knows what else. But it also gives me a chance. I'm a very much like a freestyle kind of person. I'm a person when I first started, I really tried to methodically calculate every move I made. And then I realized I was better when I was I thought about what I was doing after I already did it. And I never knew where I was coming from, and I never knew where I was going. And that was hard at the time. but I'm like, that's kind of me. I'm at my best when I just kind of freestyle something.
Right.
I'm not talking about rapping either. I'm talking about, you know, ranting on topics like I'm doing right now, or boxing, or doing God knows what.
Okay, so one of the fights that we haven't talked about yet. The great ESPN Friday Night Fights. We got Kendall Holt fighting Tim Coleman. And I have read in recent days that Kendall Holt's going to have Roy Jones Jr., our former guest, in his corner. And
that's interesting. I'll be home for him. I'll definitely tune into that. Kendall Holt, you know, still a top contender. And Tim Coleman actually has been pretty much impressed. I think it was one of his last fights on ESPN. He was very impressive in the knockout win.
And speaking of Roy Jones Jr., and here's a segue for you. He mentioned friend of mine, Reggie, there, who was dealing with some legal issues. Well, I haven't got the full story yet, but he's out. He's out of prison. And
he's
a free man. So we'll have to either get him on the show one of these days or find out the full story and get back to everybody. But he is definitely on the other side of the bars. He's out, and he's
going good for him.
Free and clear. So I've just gotten a couple Facebook messages from him. He was kind of a little bit ticked at me because the last person I talked to about his case was his lawyer, who really, you know, sounded like he was the opposing lawyer when he talked to me about the guy. And I was planning this big, huge expose article about the whole deal for Sports Illustrated, and I was working with Patrick McGilligan, who is our boxing historian, who comes on every now and then and writes some articles every now and then for us. And, you know, I wanted to work on it with him. And it kind of fell apart when I talked to the lawyer, and he kind of gave me this this whole story about how he was guilty of sin, and, you know, he used all the money that he was supposed to use for the camp right away. And, you know, it just didn't sound like he was an average at all. And so Reggie was a little bit ticked off about that, but it sounds like, you know, it's understandable. He's not holding a grudge or anything. But you have those situations where it's a tough case. You know, he's on the other side of it now. You know, looking back, it's don't worry. But you know, when he was going, there was a lot of conflict facts and forth, and to determine what was really happening. I'd love to get the full story. I'm going to keep in touch with him, keep talk to him about it, and see what happens. Maybe we'll have him on before the year is out. Let's see what's going on, what his future holds there. But Showtime's got some fights this weekend, actually Friday. Friday night fights. Super Bantam, Randy Caballero, 13-0 with 7 knockouts, fighting Jose Luis Areza, 29-1 knockouts for the WBC Youth Mental Super Bantamweight title. Also on that card for the WBO Youth title, Omar Figueroa, 1-1, fighting Ramon Ayala, who's 23-2-1 knockouts. So, that's it for that. Worth mentioning. Let's see what else we got going on. Interesting fight. Lombardi Saturday. Cruiserweight. Get Gio Ragomini. It's 29-1, 12 knockouts. Silvio Bruce, 62-10 with 2 draws and 37 knockouts. And that's for the vacant WBC Earthweight title. I still don't understand how they can have silver titles when they don't have gold titles.
Diamond or youth or... I was talking to a guy who feel about the youth title, which I don't even know how young you have to be to hold it. But I'm like, yeah, Wilfred Benitez sure as hell didn't hold a youth title when he won the world title at 17.
Yeah, right. Let's see. We got another fight in Sinaloa, Mexico for the WBC lightweight title on Saturday. That's Antonio DeMarco, 26-2 with 1 draw, 19 knockouts, fighting Miguel Roman, who's 37-9 with 28 knockouts. And speaking of youth titles, the WBC Youth World Middleweight title is on the line in the co-main event there between Gilberto Ramirez Sanchez, who's 20-0 with 18 knockouts, and the old TBA, who was it's kind of cutting it close to not know who you're going to fight 3 days. Fight. They probably know by now they just have an updated box rec, but that's kind of crazy. But it is Mexico. Probably anything goes down there. Who knows? See what else we got. Nothing jumping on me right away here. There's a sort of interesting undefeated fighters here. Somebody's got to go in Kiev at middleweight. We got Vitaly Kopylenko, who's 16-0 with 7 knockouts, fighting Vasil Tarabarov, who is 22-0 with 1 draw and 8 knockouts. That's for the vacant World Boxing Federation Intercontinental middleweight title. Say that 10 times fast.
Yeah,
no. And big fight over in the UK, our guest's former home. We got Cal Brook versus Matthew Hatton, and we've got a ton of blogs on our website about that fight. So if there's anything that you want to know about that fight and that card, you can probably find it on our blog because we get updates all the time about this one. It's like, every now and then we get a fight that comes up, and there's so much PR that gets put out, and it's like I'm really happy once the fight is over because I don't have to read any more PR. This is one of them. But Brooke is 26-0 with 18 knockouts at welterweight, fighting Matthew Hatton, who's 42-5 with 16 knockouts and 2 draws. And it's for 2 titles, the WBA Intercontinental welterweight title and the IBF International welterweight title. There's also a couple pretty interesting undercard fights here. We got Carl Frampton at super bantamweight. He's undefeated at 12-0 with 8 knockouts, fighting Prosper Ankra, who's 18-2 with 13 knockouts, and both of his losses are by knockout. And also we got Grigoris Proxa. Probably not pronouncing that right at all. He's middleweight, undefeated at 26-0 with 19 knockouts, fighting Kerry Hope. And he's 16-3 with 1 knockout. So that's for the EBU middleweight title as well. But, obviously, Hope is not a knockout artist. 16 fights, just 1 knockout. You don't see that a lot. We got, what else do we have? There's another undefeated, couple undefeated guys going at it in Atlanta, Georgia this Saturday. Some of it gets televised, but we got Chris Howard at lightweight. He's 14-0-1 with 6 knockouts, fighting Arash Usmani, 17-0 with 8 knockouts. And we go to HBO. Got some points on HBO. You already mentioned Martinez versus Macklin. Macklin, I should say. Martinez is 48-2-2 with 27 knockouts, fighting Macklin, who's 28-3 with 19 knockouts. And we also have a 10-round heavyweight fight worth talking about and a 10-round super middleweight fight featuring former guest Edwin Rodriguez and Don Quartz. Yeah, they call it Bombs Away because they both have Bomb in their nickname.
Nice.
Donovan George is Da Bomb, I think, is his nickname. And Edwin is La Bomba. So Da Bomb and The Bomb. So we got Rodriguez is undefeated, 20-0, 14 knockouts. Donovan George is 22-1-1 with 19 knockouts. So he has a little higher knockout percentage. He's got the loss and the draw. I thought Edwin Rodriguez didn't really do that well in his last fight, but then they published
the win.
Yeah. Then they published the CompuStat numbers after the fight, and that kind of changed my mind about how well he did. But, you know, the guy he fought last was
was really scrappy, really unorthodox, and you know, different type of fighter. So he had a little bit of a different performance than he's used to, but he pulled it out, got it out, and won the fight. And this is, I think, a little bit more serious challenge for him. Donovan George has been around for a long time. I know we've been putting out a lot of PR about him over the years. So, and then Edwin is the guy I've met personally. I've talked to. We've had him on the show. So we'll be rooting for him, of course. But it's going to definitely be a tough fight for him. It's a 10-rounder. And it's going to be a big step up for him, too, on the television aspect of it, because he's going to be on cable TV here now. I think it's, even though he's been on ESPN, it's a step up for him to the upper tier here, where he's going to be getting into the championship mix if he wins this. Also on the card, we have a heavyweight fight between Magomed Abdusalamov, who is a perfect 13-0 with 13 knockouts.
Nice.
And Jason Pettaway is going to be his either next victim or the guy who gets the upset. And he is 11-0, Pettaway, with 8 knockouts. So somebody's always got to go, and somebody's probably going to get knocked out in this one. So, yeah, it's definitely an HBO card I'd like to be watching, even though I probably won't catch it because I don't have HBO, and I don't always get the free feeds set up for boxing. It's more MMA that I look for. And every now and then there's a big enough fight that I'll watch it for free online somewhere. But that's it. That's takes us through Sunday. There's nothing really good on Sunday except for, here's a mismatch of the week in Japan. One fight on the whole card, and it's for a title, of course. The OPBF bantamweight title, whatever that means. Oriental Pacific something. I don't know. Boxing Federation, maybe? The OPBF. The OPP title. It's Raleigh Matsushita, who's 29-8-1 with 17 knockouts, fighting Ji Hwan Lee, who's 5-1-1. So that's our mismatch of the week, coming to you from Japan. That's it. And there's really not that much MMA. There's just the, as far as I know, I mean, Sherdog changed their whole look. So it's tough to access the list of everything going on because they changed it. They pretty much just have Strikeforce, Bellator, and UFC listed on the homepage there. And UFC doesn't have any events till April. So it's pretty much Friday night fights for MMA. You got Bellator tomorrow, and you got Tough, the Ultimate Fighter, live. And we'll have a couple guests next week for sure. And we'll probably be back and better than ever next Thursday night at 8 o'clock. For everybody, and check out the blog in the meantime. Visit our sponsors, drinkcocaine.com. We got obviously our guest tonight. Thank our guest, Stephen Andrews, and don't forget to check out MMAXM.com if you're a fighter, promoter, manager, or just a fan of the sport and you want to check out how it works and what it's all about. And that's it. That's all we got, I think. I'm going to end about 10 minutes early here.
Yeah, I don't think I got anything else to share. Lots of fights this weekend. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Stay sober. Yep. I got my big, shiny, green leprechaun hat and green mouthwash.
Well, I'm only half Irish, so I don't always celebrate it, but it's definitely one of those days that gives you an excuse to get drunk if you are.
Yeah.
Not that most Irish people need an excuse, right?
Yeah, true.
The old
best Irish joke I've ever heard about drinking is, what's an Irish seven-course meal?
A six-pack and a boiled potato?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I've been busting on the Irish for a long time.
So happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody of Irish descent, and everybody who just celebrates it to celebrate it. Enjoy your green beer.
Have fun, stay safe, and then we'll talk to you next week.
Alrighty. Thanks for stopping by, folks. That's all.
Later.